So let me start by thanking Your Holiness for giving me this opportunity to speak about this subject. So the topic of discussion today is Penal Topological Insulator. So this is a rather exotic statement. I don't know any experimental realization, but hopefully it's kind of fun thing to think about. Okay, so I'll run this thing. So I'd like to start from that. Oh, I need a mic, is it?
Does it work? No, it's not a speaker, right? Yeah, sure. Realize that. Okay, so I'd like to start by talking about some rather general idea about how to classify topological phases. So this idea has been very popular in the literature. So first of all, I will try to... what is this? Do you have a pointer? Good. Okay, so I'm gonna use a classical pointer. So I'm gonna start by discussing sort of rough classification of so possible topological phases. So this classification goes with the names like long-range entanglement and symmetric protective topological order. So basically the question I'll be asking in this talk is whether we can actually have both kinds of characteristics of topological phases. So more specifically, I'll provide the construction of the spin liquid, where the spinel excitation spectrum has some topological band structure. And then I'll discuss what kind of consequences we will have. And if time allows, then I will hope to move to the second topic. So this is quite different from the first topic, but it's sort of, there are some interesting things to say. Okay. So, so let me just think about a gap phases first. So imagine that I'm thinking about a many body state where there's an excitation gap. So it's typically when we talk about topological phases, we say these phases are not adiabatically connected to some simple phases. Say simple phases means these phases are fully characterized by some local information, like a local order parameter. And somehow you cannot construct the local unitary transform path between the two phases without closing the bulk gap. So without going through the phase transition, you cannot go from this phase to the other phase. So typical examples are like fractional quantum Hall state and spin liquid phases. And quite often these phases are called long-range entangled state, and mainly because perhaps you can think about all these simple phases as some kind of product state, and somehow the idea is that these phases cannot be transformed to any product state under any circumstance. So that's why these phases are called long-range entangled state. There's a second type of state. It's called symmetric protected topological phases. So the idea is that now there is some class of topological phases, and these phases are protected by some global symmetries. So in that case, you cannot construct a path connecting these two phases. If you insist that the path connecting these two phases also satisfy certain symmetries, certain global symmetries. So there's no symmetric preserving path connecting these two phases without closing the bulk gap. So, but on the other hand, you can construct a path connecting these two phases by breaking the symmetry. So if you're willing to break whatever the symmetry that topological phases has, phases have, then you could construct a path connecting these two phases. So typical example is topological band insulator. Topological band insulator is protected by tiny vessel symmetry. So if you try to connect, say, topological band insulator and usual band insulator, trivial band insulator, then if you insist that the path has to satisfy tiny vessel symmetry, then you cannot connect these two phases. But if you're willing to consider a path that breaks tiny vessel symmetry, but then you can construct the path that's connecting trivial band insulator and topological band insulator. So that's basically the idea of symmetry protected topological order. Okay. Is it clear? Yeah. Sorry, this is probably too elementary to some of you, but I wanted to start with this. Okay, so before I go on to my main topic, if you search for the topological band insulator,
I'm already lost.
Like that. You know, I just discovered that if you Google topology and band, then sometimes you find some interesting information like this. Apparently, there is a music band called Topology in Australia. So musicians like topology and band. I just wanted to make sure. Anyway. Okay. I'm just trying to wake you up. Okay. So the question is, can we have both characteristics? Can we have both, say, long-range entanglement-like structure? And can we also have a symmetry protected topological property? That's basically the question I'm asking. So as an example, I'd like to present an example of three-dimensional U-N spinnaker, where gap spinons actually have this topological band structure. Okay. So strictly speaking, this U-N spinnaker is not a gap state, because in U-N spinnaker, there's a gapless U-N photon. So strictly speaking, you know, there is a gapless mode, but the matter field is gapped. So in that sense, I would consider that as a sort of class of gap phases. And so usually to say such a state may actually exist. So the reason why this kind of phase has both features is that this is a spinnaker, so there's obviously a long-range entanglement. But then if the spinon excitations have topological band structure, then this topological band structure is actually protected by tiny vessel symmetry. So imagine that I have the ordinary U-N spinnaker. It's kind of strange to say something about the ordinary U-N spinnaker, but let's say, think about ordinary U-N spinnaker, then there's this more strange, U-N spinnaker with a topological band structure. Yeah. So again, the same thing. If I'm willing to break tiny vessel symmetry in the path connecting these two phases, I can connect these two phases. But if I insist that whatever the path I choose should satisfy tiny vessel symmetry, then I cannot connect these two phases. So in that sense, these two phases are distinct phases of matter. Okay. And in some sense, this is a fractionalized topological insulator. In the sense that the elementary excitations are fractionalized, the spinons are the elementary excitations. Another thing to notice is that such phases in two dimensions are actually unstable, because this is a U-N spinnaker with a gap matter field. So what that means is that when you integrate our matter field, you just get a electrodynamic usual U-N electrodynamic action. So if that's the case, then there are this famous instanton effect. So such a phase is immediately confined. So this is Polyakov argument saying that instanton effects that you confine this spinon excitation. So these phases are stable only in three dimensions, not in 2D. Okay. So I like to consider a specific model. So the point is that it's very easy to say, if I can construct this kind of phase, it's kind of interesting, and presumably it exists. But it's very difficult to construct the actual model where you can show that such a phase exists or may exist. Okay. So I like to work with the following model. So I like to consider J1, J2 model on the part of Polaris. And in particular, I like to take the nearest neighbor coupling to be antiferromagnetic, and next nearest neighbor coupling to be ferromagnetic. And if you consider classical model, and we know that if J2 is zero, then this model is highly frustrated. So there's extensive degeneracy in the ground state manifold. Now, if you introduce J2, then in principle, you can leave some of this degeneracy. But if J2 is much, much bigger than J1, then any possible magnetic order will be very fragile, because you know, if you can stabilize any magnetic order at small J2, the transition temperature will be extremely small. So this model is still highly frustrating. And I will tell you later what actually happens at the classical level when you add J2. Okay, so this is a model that I like to consider. And this model, therefore, has a chance that the ground state quantum model of like this, you know, that it may support the spin leaky like ground state. So that's basically the one argument. Okay. So the method I like to use is the usual slave particle construction or the particle construction. So this is one of the standard methods to get a spin leaky ground state immediately. So the way to do it is you just rewrite your spin operator in terms of the slave fermion operators with a constraint, the number of particles per side is exactly one. Then you immediately notice that the spin-spin interaction becomes basically a four fermion interaction. So as often emphasized in the literature, this is an ultimate strong correlation problem because you only have an interaction energy. There's no kinetic energy for the fermions. So at this stage, you just transform the one difficult problem to another difficult problem. You didn't achieve anything. But typically, we do some kind of mean field theory. So let's do the mean field theory for the anti-ferromagnetic interaction. And as well known in the literature, this spin-spin interaction can be decoupled into as a particle-hole type correlation and particle-particle type correlation. And all this thing has to be done in a single sector because, you know, you have an anti-ferromagnetic interaction. And therefore, usually it's argued that you generate emergent kinetic energy term like this or emergent single pairing correlation like that. But at the end of the day, the mean field theory just becomes usual PCS kind of mean field Hamiltonian. On the other hand, if you have a ferromagnetic interaction, then you then, then this kind of decoupling is just unstable. So you actually have to decouple this Heisenberg interaction in a spin triplet channel. So instead of generating a usual particle-hole correlation or hopping, you actually generate some kind of emergent spin orbit coupling, emergent spin orbit hopping. Or you know, you could flip the spin of the spin-off. So such a possibility exists for this ferromagnetic channel. You may also generate an emergent triplet pairing because of that. So the corresponding the particle hole or particle-particle type correlation basically has this form in a triplet channel. So you basically have to use a ferromagnetic decoupling for the nearest neighbor. And for the next nearest neighbor, I like to use, say, ferromagnetic, you know, this type of triplet decoupling. That's basically one way to get a mean field Hamiltonian. So the point is that in this talk, I like to consider only U1 spin naked. What that means is that I like to put all the pairing terms to be zero. And I will tell you why I want to do that later. And I like to consider time reversal invariant spin naked. So I don't want to break time as a symmetry. So what that means is that among all possible mean field answers, there should be a case where this the usual hopping is a real number, and this spin flip hopping is imaginary. So if that's the case, then your mean field Hamiltonian is manifestly time reversal invariant. So let's look at such an answer, and let's consider the most symmetric spin naked in the sense that I like to break the least amount of Lattice symmetry. So if it's possible, I like to keep all the Lattice symmetry. So in that sense, I like to consider the most symmetric spin naked. So the answer we are choosing is as follows. I like to choose this hopping parameter to be say, uniform across the system, but it goes along only the nearest neighbors. But then there are several possible choices for this spin flip hopping type correlation. So for example, the second nearest neighbors on parapolaris belongs to two different sub-lattices. Remember that there are four different sub-lattice index on the parapolaris. So you can think about second nearest neighbors connected, second nearest neighbors as being connected through some intermediate atom belong to the third type of sublattice. So in pictures, if I try to think about a next nearest neighbor copy like this, then you can think of that as being connected by another atom in the middle. It belongs to a different sublattice. Okay, so then you can sort of write down a very general answers for this kind of vector field by specifying some unit vector connecting, you know, basically alpha and beta are, say, next nearest neighbor site, then gamma is an intermediate atom. So by specifying all these unit vectors for the paths connecting these two sublattice indices, you can sort of enumerate all possible mean field answers of this kind. And the directions of all these unit vectors are chosen to preserve the lattice symmetries. Okay. So I don't want to go into the details, but basically what you can show is that if you choose four independent unit vectors on the lattice, then the rest of the unit vectors are basically constrained by symmetry. So there are not many degree of freedom. So here we like to consider two different answers. So answers two is actually, I would say, is a better answer because this answer preserves all the lattice symmetries. In fact, it turns out that we can show rigorously that there's only one answer that preserves all the lattice symmetry, this one. So I don't want to go into detail, but I just want to tell you that it exists. And this is another answer that preserves all the translation symmetry, but it does not satisfy certain discrete rotation symmetry. So I like to take these two answers like this. So important thing about those different answers is that if you take these factorial answers like this, then it basically breaks the spin SU2 symmetry completely. And that's actually quite important. Okay. So with whatever choice of nearest neighbor hopping and some kind of spin flip hopping, this is sort of the mean field Hamiltonian you get. This is coming from nearest neighbor. This is coming from next nearest neighbor interaction. The point I like to make is that if this amplitude is finite, then basically means that you generate an emergent spin orbit coupling. So this ferromagnetic coupling basically gives you some kind of emergent spin orbit coupling for the spin orbit. Okay? So if you only have antiferromagnetic interaction between the nearest neighbor, you only get this. But that can be generated. So if you know this vectorial field E is finite. So we choose this vectorial field E in such a way that it breaks SU2 symmetry completely. So at the mean field Hamiltonian level, this is some kind of spontaneous spin SU2 symmetry breaking. So original model is SU2 symmetric. Remember, the spin model is SU2 symmetric. But this mean field Hamiltonian breaks this spin SU2 symmetry. So if this amplitude is finite, okay. And just to think about the energetics, you know, this is just mean field theory, so you can really trust this energetics. But say, you know, among these answers one and two, you discover that the energy is something like this for some choice of J2 by J1. Now, it turns out that if you do a Monte Carlo on the classical model, classical J1, J2 model like this on the paracolaris, then actually the classical ground state is an inconventional magnetic order with a HH0 type inconventional order. For example, for J2 by J1, 0.05, you get some number like this. But if you just calculate the classical energy of this state, then you get some number like that. And here, I have to emphasize that this is the classical energy, and I didn't include something like 0.0 quantum fluctuation. So if I include that, this energy may become lower. But the point I like to make is that the energy of those states are still compared to the classical energy. So it's not, you know, it's not like I'm thinking about a crazy state compared to classically magnetically older state. This is one point that I wanted to make.
These are projected energy?
No, this is a mean field energy. It's a naive mean field energy without projection.
Still be crazy.
Yes, still, yeah, exactly.
So
yes.
You say SU2 is completely broken.
Yeah, so this E vector is chosen in such a way that they are all non-collinear. So this spin SU2 symmetry is broken. So there's no U1 symmetry left. That's all I want to say.
It's a spin length, right? So
right.
SU2 is not so broken that it's a magnet.
No. The spin rotation symmetry is broken. That's what I meant.
So maybe you can tell us in terms of spin operator.
But there must be some symmetry left. Yeah.
Yes, so I'll tell you.
So you don't mean completely broken, right? It must be.
Yeah, completely broken means there's no U1 symmetry left.
Continuous symmetry left.
Yes.
But it must be just symmetry.
Yes, yeah, sorry. Yeah, some, only some
discrete. There's residue of it left.
Right, only some discrete symmetry is left. Yes.
Right.
Yeah. You know, English is my second language, so.
Yeah. Maybe for that question, listening in Polish, no doubt.
Sure.
You can say in Korean what you meant to do.
That's a good idea. Actually, I don't know what to say in Korean.
The problem would be some of us.
Right. Okay, so let's take these two answers and see what happens to the spin of band structure. Okay, so this is the spin of band structure for the answers number one, and this is spin of band structure for answers number two. So when J2 is zero, then basically what actually happens is that these two bands are degenerate and flat, and it touches the other band at the gamma point, so the usual spectrum. But because of this emergence spin of
negative energies, these are spinons which are excitations above the ground state.
The chemical potential is here. So all these bands are filled up, and the chemical potential is here. So that's why it's a band insulator. Yeah.
So you have gapless other modes, so this is all within.
I'm only looking.
It's a U. It's also a U1 spin length.
Yes.
It's a gapless spin length, right?
That's right. So the photon is gapless, but not the spinon. Spinons are gapped.
Right.
But there's a photon.
Well-defined many-body states. It's
yes.
Really just somehow the minimum gap one is the only one that's the lowest energy spin on.
Right. That's correct.
It can all be dressed with photons.
That's right. So chemical potential is here.
Yeah.
So these are the gap excitation. Yeah.
Right. So it's that upper band.
Yes. Exactly. Here. Yeah. So this dispersing band is basically filled up. So the point is that when you add this emergent spin orbit coupling term, basically you open up a gap at the gamma point, it becomes a band insulator. So previously, when you only have J1, then basically there's some kind of band touching, the flat band and the quadratically dispersing band. But it opens up a gap. So you get a gap spin on with a U1 photon. So that's basically the ground state. Okay, so the question is, so I end up with some kind of band structure for the spinon, and this, you know, you get some kind of band insulator, if you like. But the question is whether this is a trivial band insulator or topological band insulator for the spinon, not for the electron, right? Okay, so for that purpose, we can use this famous Fouquet index, because the lattice sector has an emergent symmetry. And I didn't break any inverted symmetry in my infield answer. Inverted symmetry is still intact. So you use this criteria that you take the parity eigenvalues at time inverse invariant momentum, and then you consider product of those parity eigenvalues for one of the degenerate Cramer pairs. Then you can define all these indices. So I don't want to go into details. So at the end of the day, what actually happens is that you get this index, like the strong index is 1, then all the weak index is 0. So you end up with strong topological insulator of spinon, basically. Okay. So what that means is that if I think about this kind of spin-liquid state with the boundary, then at the boundary there should be a robust gapless spinon and all surfaces. So in the bulk, spinons are gapped. But just like, you know, in analogy to usual electronic topological insulator, there should be a gapless spinon at the surface with this characteristic Dirac spectrum, if you like. So So, clear so far? Okay. Yeah. Okay. So I say that maybe I should correct that. So the SE2 symmetry is spontaneously broken by this answer. So it turns out that if you consider so since SE2 symmetry is broken, now what that means is that I should be able to construct an order parameter. So it turns out that the corresponding order parameter is like the Bond numeric order. So you just consider this bilinear operator in terms of the spin operators at site I and j, and this is some kind of quadrupolar-like operator. Then you can rewrite this in terms of this vectorial order parameter E at the mean field theory, and this is quadratic in E. So if those parameters E is non-zero, then basically, this Bond numeric order parameter is finite. So this is basically the order parameter that characterizes the broken symmetry. So it's a Bond numeric state. It's a Bond numeric state. And you can also show that this order parameter is non-zero, but this cross product, sometimes people call this a vector spin chirality. So this vector spin chirality is also non-zero. So in the literature, this order parameter is sometimes called N-numeric. This order parameter is called P-numeric. I have no idea why it's called that way, but that's basically what it is. And in this case, both of them are non-zero.
Yeah. And
that's also one of the bond. Yeah, that's also defined along the bond, I and J. But this is near the next nearest neighbor. These are all defined for the next nearest neighbor, right? Because so it's the second neighbor.
The bond, the bond you're talking about is the second neighbor.
Yes, exactly. Yeah. Okay. And since since I'm breaking SE2 symmetry up to some discrete degree of freedom, there should be a three Goldstone mode according to Goldstone theorem. So there are three Goldstone modes. Then you have this kind of ordering. So this is a rather complicated state. If I think about it, it's a U1 photon because it's a U1 spin-naked. But then there's a three Goldstone mode associated with the Bond numeric order. Yeah.
Thank you, Mehmet. So you call it a spin liquid, but it breaks SU2 as a...
Yes. So
if you look at thermodynamic measurement, it would be like an ordinary magnet, no? If it breaks SU2.
Right. But as I said, this is what you may call Bond numeric star phase. So there are all these spin liquid phases coexisting with broken symmetry. So in that sense, this is still a spin liquid in the sense that you still have a fractionalized spin on excitations. So these excitations are gapped excitations, but still there's a well-defined spin on excitation. These are fractionalized excitations, right? And on top of that, there is a broken symmetry, and this because of that, there's a Goldstone mode. So it's a coexisting phase. Coexisting phase.
Going to this phase, the nonlinear susceptibility would diverge.
For numeric order.
Right?
Yeah, for numeric order, I guess it does, right?
It doesn't have to, this question.
Yes.
This one still has a cubic symmetry.
Six
time reversal?
Time reversal is not broken. Yeah. Time losses. The only thing that's broken is this SU2 symmetry.
It's not broken in a uniform way.
No.
These chaotic order parameters differ.
Right, exactly. The direction is non collinear.
So there's, for instance, susceptibility would still be isotropic.
I think still isotropic. Yeah.
Because
it has to be isotropic. Linear susceptibility has to be still isotropic because you don't break cubic symmetry. But we construct this vector Z precisely, to preserve the lattice symmetry. Yeah, but that's the way that this Z vector is constructed, so that's why you don't break cubic symmetry. But this Bond numeric order doesn't break the cubic symmetry either.
But just to make sure, the director of the symmetry is different points in different directions
within the unit set, yes, exactly.
It's got some pattern in the cell. It
right.
Keeps all the same.
Yes, exactly. Yes.
Maybe a slightly different way of asking the same question. So if you were to you know, add symmetry allowed spin orbit coupling terms, DM interaction.
Right.
Would, you know, so that they're automatically are these pneumatic order parameters.
Yeah, basically. State. Yes, basically. Yeah.
State that doesn't break any symmetry. So.
Yeah. You can think of that way. Yes. Actually, this one, actually, there was original way that we came up with this answer. Yeah. Right. Okay. So as I emphasized, there is an emergent compact muon gauge field by construction. So this corresponds to like phase fluctuations of this E field and chi field, and there's a Goldstone mode. And you can also think about some kind of topological defect, so the textures associated with this vectorial, sort of, if you like, numeric vector like EIJ. So you can think about that, and you can worry about like what kind of quantum numbers these kind of textures may carry. We didn't quite accomplish that, but you know, this is one problem we can think about. The spinors are gapped in the bulk, but spinors are gapped at the surface. So in that sense, this boundary of such a ground state will be a thermal metal. It can carry entropy, so you know it can give you thermal conduction at the boundary, even though the gap, the bulk is not conducting heat.
Well, the other, of course, in this structure, a surface breaks all this symmetry of the lattice, and you take that into account. Do it on just wonder if the surface could
screw up this thing?
Screw up the business of being gapless, because of course at the surface the system has much less symmetry because
right. But then the same argument goes to topological insulator, right? It's basically the same kind of construction.
And it's no different than topological.
Yeah.
Okay. Yeah. I don't remember the details now, but this is answered by 11.
Yes.
So that also produces fermionic objects with the coupling. But in their case,
yes.
The question of whether the spin, at least in two dimensions, in the gap,
right.
Whether the edge of the gap is independent of what's going on in the top, because the gauge sector allows certain.
Right, but this construction is different from theirs. Right? This construction basically relies on having, you know, this topological spectral spin on that somehow guarantees the.
We also have a spectral spin on the bulk. It's just that the end exudations become gapped sometimes, depending on what operators are not in
right.
The gauge sector. So, relating somehow to what you've been saying, it's not completely obvious. I mean, you couldn't actually include different phases at the surface, but theirs is an example that does it.
Yeah. So I mean, for
even for the trivial topological series, they use that case. The surface doesn't have any gap. It's in some other phase. So there is some phase diagram in the surface.
Right. So without changing any symmetries at the surface, that they got the certain processes became allowed at the surface. Sometimes enough, sometimes
not. Yeah, I think it's a somewhat different state. That's really a fractional topological state.
Right.
Just because often
not
the.
Yes.
Yeah.
So that's why. That's why I didn't call this phase fractional topological insulator, just to distinguish this phase from that phase. This one I said fractionalized. I chose the word very carefully. So.
Maybe the way to make it sharp is so if you look at the entanglement spectrum, that would be the gapless feature, perhaps.
Presumably, yes.
That's the sharper statement.
Right, but this system is much more complicated. Remember that this one has a uon photon, not just a spin on, so computing entanglement entropy. Yeah, well, you know, you're basically, unless you can assume that entanglement entropy, you know, can be separated into sort of gauge field sector, spin on sector. It's not guaranteed here, so I don't know. Yeah. Okay, so I'd just like to point out that Leon had this alternative way to get this spin on topological insulator, starting from a metal, or the starting from a metal. So imagine that I consider Hubbard model instead of spin model, but I like to consider the spin-orbit coupling. Okay? So if spin-orbit coupling is small, I may have a metal. If I increase spin-orbit coupling, I may get into this interesting topological band insulator when U is zero, when there's no correlation. Then the idea was that, okay, now I take a metal, then I increase the correlation, then if you use, say, you know, what people call slave rotor construction, then you can think about getting to a gapless spin liquid phase where basically spin-on excitation in this phase has a Fermi surface in it. And this Fermi surface of spin-on is basically inherited from the electron Fermi surface. Okay, so. For example, Santil discussed this possibility in the past. So using the same idea, if you start from a topological band insulator, you may imagine that you just destroy the charge coherence. Then the electron band structure here can be transferred to the band structure of the spin-on. In that case, spin-ons will naturally have some kind of topological spectrum. So this is the general idea. So you know, one way to go about it is that you use a slave rotor field theory. You rewrite your electron operator as a product of spin carrying fermions and charge carrying rotor field. So they are interacting with each other in terms of some kind of elongation field. Now, if you are in a topological insulator phase, your rotor degree of freedom is coherent. You have a charge coherence, so you get a well-defined electron quasi particle. Even though it's a band insulator, but if the correlation is strong, and then your charge degree of freedom may be gapped. Then in that case, the only thing what is left out is basically this spin-on excitation, but that may actually inherit the band structure from the topological band insulator. Then these spin-ons naturally can have topological spectrum. So that's one way to get a topological spectrum of spin-on. But I like to emphasize that here, if you do this, this spin-on. So in this case, basically the spin-orbit coupling is given. The spin-orbit structure of the band structure is given from the electron, and it's not like spontaneous or emergent spin-orbit coupling like at the other case. In the other case, the spin-orbit coupling is really emergent because of the correlation. Here, this spin-orbit coupling is inherited from the electronic topological band insulator. So it's a slightly different construction. Okay. So another interesting thing to think about is that since your spin-ons have this topological spectrum, but if you integrate out this matter field degree of freedom, you will be generating this famous axion term for the electromagnetic action. So this has been discussed in the literature of topological band insulator. But that, you know, that was mostly discussed in the context of physical gauge field. Basically, you know, you apply electric field and you generate a magnetic response, or you apply a magnetic field and you generate electric polarization, that kind of setup. And the point is that this term is periodic in 2 pi, and time, if you require time muscle invariance, then zeta has to be 0 or pi. And when zeta is pi, it's a topological insulator. So the point is that the monopoles in compact D plus 1 dimensional QED with the zeta term acquire a charge, gauge charge, so as well as magnetic charge. So it is magnetic charge because it's a monopole, but it also acquires an electric charge, and they actually become a dion. So what that means is that this confinement, deconfinement transition starting from this type of spin liquid has to occur by condensing dions instead of monopole. Remember that in the usual U-N spin liquid, the confinement deconfinement transition happens by condensing monopole. In this case, natural object to condense is just a dion because monopole naturally acquires a gauge charge. So for the usual confinement transition, it's described by condensation monopole. The monopoles carry magnetic charge. So if you condense object that carries magnetic charge, then there's a marginal effect, so your electric flux is basically confined. It's an opposite of usual marginal effect. And that frozen electric flux pattern basically breaks parity, and that electric field basically corresponds to this valence solid order parameter, and that's why, you know, quite often by confinement you can go to valence solid order starting from a spin-liquid. Now, in this case, you have to condense the ion. The ions carry both electric and magnetic charges. So now, if you condense those objects, then there's a marginal effect of both magnetic and electric flux. You confine electric flux, you also have to confine magnetic flux. So once you do that, then, for example, confined magnetic flux basically breaks time versus symmetry. So remember that electric field breaks parity, magnetic field breaks time versus symmetry. So once you have this confined magnetic flux, then it basically breaks time versus symmetry. And you can sort of show that you know, the corresponding order parameter for this in the conventional phase is basically the scalar spin chirality order. So you know, the magnetic field along the x direction is related to, say, magnetic field along the g direction. It can be related to this expectation value of scalar spin chirality order. So the natural consequence is that you can have a continuous transition from say fractionalized boundary magnetic order state, that's the spin on topological insulator, then the resulting phase is some kind of coexisting valence for solid order and scalar spin chirality order states. So if this transition exists, again, it's one of those Landau forbidden transitions.
So why is it continuous?
It's a ion condensation. I'm assuming that ion condensation is continuous transition. Then this transition will be continuous.
Assuming it's what continuous?
I don't know.
It can always be first order.
Yeah, it can only be first order, yes.
Couple of normal transitions.
Huh? Yeah.
Yeah, but the three plus one being superconducting transition is first order.
Fluctuation during first order.
So presumably, but you know.
If we already have these pneumatic orders, can you then add a, the spin chirality?
Yes.
Isn't that those two together mean you just have to
spin order? You said.
Seems like you know, you could have just called a single spin order, just a magnetization.
Basically, suggesting that you don't have this bond pneumatic order in their own condensed space.
Right. Yeah.
Why are you suggesting?
Oh, you're saying that the pneumatic order went away at this transition.
Because the spinors are confined, the spinors are.
Yeah, but I mean, I don't have a strong argument. Okay, so I don't have a strong argument. It could be that, you know, bond pneumatic order always stays. Yeah. So then
just be
that's also possible. Yes, I agree with you. Okay, I think I should stop. Okay, thank you very much.
Would you want to debate with Michael instead of stopping and have a quick question?
Yeah.
For the usual topological insulator, it is known that the bulk back is very important to protect this edge surface mode, right?
Yeah.
But in this case, we have a U1 gap spoken about. Yeah. So in this case, what kind of interaction we have between this bulk photon and the surface gap is spinner?
Yeah. So I didn't have time to talk about that. So what actually happens is that in this case, the gapless matter degree of freedom lives on the surface, but the gauge field lives in the bulk. It's a three-dimensional gauge field. So this three-dimensional gauge field interact with the 2D gapless spin-on degree of freedom. So at the end of the day, the effective interaction between those spin-ons at the surface is much weaker than two spin-ons interacting in a purely two-dimensional system or a three-dimensional system. So in fact, you can show that the singularity you generate, you know, by including this current interaction gauge field, it's much weaker, and in fact, the surface state is actually much better stabilized compared to usual 2D U1 spin-liquid. So in that sense, it's quite stable. compare it. Actually, I think that this is probably the best way to generate this sort of relatively stable U1 spin naked with some kind of quantum subset. So that you can sort of
can estimate this impressions between spin on induced by this U1.
Yes. So remember that in 2D usually self energy goes like omega to the third. In this case, it's only marginally relevant. It's omega log of omega is the self energy. So in that sense, it's more stable than omega t to the third.
So it's like 1 over r cubed, or it's even...
Yeah, so you can think of that like, you know, the gauge field integrate over third dimension that gives you, you know, much less singular gauge field. Yeah.
Okay, thanks.
Yeah.